a Football Friday on Sports Radio 610. Here's Payne and Pendergast.
So we're going to get to the Texans here. The big topic this morning nationally, and I would say, I know they're talking about it. I listen to other cities before I come in sometimes. They're talking about it too. Tua Tagovailoa left last night's game with another concussion. The Dolphins lost to the Bills 31-10. I'm kind of chuckling a little bit because on ESPN right now, it's the beginning of Get Up, so they're like flashing tweets up from people on X last night, Seth, that had opinions on Tua, like Lewis Riddick, who works for ESPN, talking about how, you know, hate to have this conversation, but he's got to, you know, there's got to be serious discussion about whether he should play football again. Shannon Sharp tweet pops up there, kind of the same thing, praying for the young man. The third tweet they put up is Dez Bryant. I'm like, what? Like, why? Where did this come from? Like, I get Lewis Riddick and Shannon Sharp. They both work for ESPN. They're both, like, respected opinions out there. Like, the third and only other tweet they showed was Dez Bryant. I'm like, okay, what? I didn't even know Dez was on Twitter. It's just completely random to me.
Dez Bryant gets a lot of engagement. He's not afraid to speak his mind.
I guess
he's
not.
He's out there. Yeah, Dez is on Twitter a lot.
Is he? Okay.
Yeah. He weighs in, and especially because it's usually Cowboys related. He's not afraid to lambaste the Cowboys.
Okay.
So, yeah.
Okay.
He's out there a lot.
Okay. Just felt awfully random to me. Two of our foremost experts and Dez Bryant. Here are their tweets. Yeah. Okay, good
for
Dez.
It's a big name. Dez is a big name. Yeah.
Good for Dez. All right, so man, we had another awesome C.J. Stroud article. Zach Kiefer, The Athletic, had an article about C.J. Stroud. I don't know. I had not heard this story about C.J. last season that is the lead part of this article. And it's an article. It's a lot like the ones we've been seeing that talks about just how CJ's leadership is off the charts, how he's become kind of the face of this organization, all sorts of anecdotes from teammates talking about how awesome he is. I didn't know that after the Texans dropped to 0-2 last year against the Colts, and it was a bad game. I mean, they got, you know, the first week of the season, the Ravens game, they got blown out in the second half of that game. They got blown out by the Colts from jump, and CJ kind of piled up some numbers in that game to make it look closer than it really was. But that I remember coming in on Monday, and I remember the promo running for like 3 days afterwards of me saying the honeymoon's over for DeMeco Ryans. You know, this looks like same old Texans, that kind of thing. Obviously, they got things turned around. I didn't realize how big a part of that though was C.J. Stroud in the locker room after the game.
He had talked about it that he had talked to the team afterwards and showed leadership, but this was more detailed.
Very detailed. It's apparently C.J. Came into the locker room 2 weeks into his career and grabbing the attention of everyone inside the home locker room, quote, "Where are my leaders at? I need some leaders right now. Where are they at? Speak up." Texans were 0-2 at the time. They'd just been routed at home. And Brevin Jordan is in here talking. He said, "We got waxed that day, and we all had the same question, like, are we going to have one of those seasons again?" Stroud was livid, not merely at the loss, but at the fact that he was the only one willing to step up and say something about it. So this was September. And CJ obviously would go on to have a great year. But Will Anderson Jr. said some people needed to be called out. The captains needed to be called out. And Will and CJ obviously were both captains. But Jimmy Ward was a captain last year as well. And if you recall, Jimmy Ward didn't play. That was one of the games Jimmy Ward didn't play in. So yeah. I think normally Jimmy Ward would have probably been the one like, hey guys, like Jimmy's like that. But he didn't play in the game, so he didn't feel it was right for him to lambaste his teammates when he wasn't playing in that game. He's kind of reading the room. But Stroud, I guess, went off, and I guess Jimmy Ward walked up to him afterwards and said, "You're a rookie." And that took some balls.
Yeah. So, no, and Jimmy's talked about how he's the one that he encouraged CJ to speak up more early. And CJ was kind of, you know, during training camp, he wasn't even the named starter, and he was trying to just establish trust and all of that. So it's a dicey transition to go from being a guy who's not even the named starter to all of a sudden, all right, when do I start being the guy that does this? And, you know, sometimes if it's not the right guy, it can come off bad when it's a young guy doing it. But I think CJ had done such a good job of establishing himself and everything else that he was able to do it in that moment, and guys responded to it.
Yeah, I think it helps that he wasn't that way from the get-go, too. You know
right,
what I
right.
mean?
He didn't step in and all of a sudden start trying to be the hard-ass right out the gate. Like Caleb Williams telling the veterans to clean up their
exactly
lockers.
What I was thinking.
The first week of training camp.
That's right. The article says the Texans were learning that the kid who oozed California cool, CJ, also had what Ward calls this a-hole side to him, which we've heard from some of his teammates. Like, he's got that dog in him. He can be prick was another word that's been used multiple times, and he's got that side to him.
Remember Derrick Henry told the story about how at the Pro Bowl last year, he was riding on the bus with CJ, and CJ was kind of getting heated, in a good way, just talking about competing and all this stuff. And Derrick Henry said something along the lines of like, "Oh, I didn't realize you were like this.
Yeah.
You know, you're just kind of quiet, and most of the public appearance." This is before the off season of podcasting.
that's right.
That sometimes I remember my first impression of CJ just from watching press conferences at Ohio State was it felt to me like, God, this guy's just kind of quiet. You know,
he doesn't. Soft-spoken, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And now once you get the total picture of him, you see that, all right, he can be what he needs to be in any given situation, which is cool.
It's great. They go on to say, the Texans then went on to win their next two games by a combined 44 points. So that does help the story as well, that CJ came in, lambasted his teammates, and then they go out and they beat Jacksonville by 20 and Pittsburgh by 24 the next two games. So that's cool. So it's a good story. Zach Kiefer's got some good stuff in here.
The other thing, Nico Collins had said, what we saw during training camp, that after a tough practice during camp this year, Nico had walked off the field and said, man, CJ was on us today. After a sloppy practice, the offense had looked awful. Stroud had missed throws and threw picks. And we saw that at camp. It was when things weren't going well for the offense, CJ was very much looking like the quarterback who was in charge of everything. And the same way a coach might call everybody together and say, hey, all right, let's reset this right now.
Yeah.
CJ was doing a lot of that during the sloppy practice.
He was the ones here. The funny thing is the practice in this article that they're talking about was one of the Ohio practices. He kept that dog going up there in Ohio when they were doing all that team bonding and everything as well.
Yeah. Nico said, oh, he'll snap at us way more than you think.
Yeah. Yeah.
And again, that goes back to, though, too, establishing the relationship to where you don't take it personal. You know, like if you're the other player, you always want your quarterback to be the guy that you don't get angry at him when he yells at you. You feel bad about it when he yells at you.
Yep.
That you feel like you've let him down and I better get my crap together. And especially if you're somebody who gets receiving targets and you really better get your crap together.
Better get your act together.
That's why every single one of these guys is at Bible study.
Yes.
I've never met a good when you have a devout quarterback, the wide receivers are very present at Bible
study. That's it, man. They found God. Yes. Bobby Slowick met with the media yesterday. A recurring theme with CJ, look, along the lines, CJ is just as hard on himself as he is on his teammates. And a recurring theme with CJ's press conference the other day that we went through was repeatedly saying we shot ourselves in the foot. You know, we left points on the table. Like I think CJ, if you were to watch CJ's press conference and not know what the score of the Colts game was, you'd have thought they might have lost the game or that they only scored like 20 points or something like that, or 17 points. They ended up scoring 29 points. They scored a bunch of points in the game. But they nine of that was field goals from 50 yards of Kaimi, so I'm sure CJ was referring to that. Bobby Slowick was asked the same thing yesterday. Is there still, quote, a lot on the table for this Texans offense?
You know, honestly, it's probably this way across the NFL week one. But we really wanted to play clean football. That was one of the big emphasis we made going into the game. And I think execution-wise, mentally, as far as doing our job, in particular in the run game, we did that. But we didn't always do it well. There were some technique and fundamental things we definitely could clean up. I know Joe had some one-on-one ops in the hole that he would like back, and just little things like even how we have a track on a certain play or what our angle is on a combination up to the second level. We were off. And we still got some good plays out of it. But if we were on it, to us, like, we see explosives, So we felt like we missed a few of those. And then in the pass game was a little bit of everything. Protection was some physical and a lot of mental that we had to be on top of. And really it was the same route-wise all the way across the board. Like, it was a lot more inconsistent than the run game was.
I like the first part of that, Seth. I like Bobby's kind of approach to that question. He's right. Like, offense was down in the first week. passing offense in particular, like way down in week one. Like the way these teams are all treating the preseason is kind of coming back to roost in week one, looking like a preseason game for a lot of these offenses, you know. And I like that approach. Bobby Sloak was almost, it sounded like conceding, like, yeah, it's week one. It's probably going to look a little sloppy. Just don't turn the ball over. You know, just don't make any cataclysmic mistakes. You know?
Yeah,
I mean?
Yeah. No, and this is where, okay, so we had somebody earlier ask, I think he was asking an honest question. He said, so when facing the Bears defense, this is the key about the Bears defense. They're opportunistic. They get a lot of interceptions. So somebody asked earlier, honest question. So if Will Levis isn't that good and the Bears D is going to be a bigger challenge this week than last week, how are the Titans up 17? Just to lay it out, the Titans had two good touchdown drives in the first half. They had a one-yard field goal drive after a really long kickoff return. Mm-hmm. So the Bears did allow some drives, but they picked Levis off twice, and Levis threw for 127 total yards. Like, this is, you can string together some nice drives. The Bears play a lot of zone. If you want to call them bend but don't break, so be it. But they are very opportunistic. They are ball hawks. They are going to create turnover. There are a lot of things about that Bears defense when I was watching versus the Titans that reminded me of the old Peanut Tillman days. You know, they're going to rush the passer. They're going to be opportunistic in zone defense. So, yeah, Will Levis, I don't know. I answered politely to this person. He said, but I don't understand. But it was 17-0 at halftime. Yeah! The Bears didn't score any points at halftime, by halftime.
You're, okay.
And the Titans, Will Levis threw two interceptions in the game.
You're doing what you were saying, what you were trying to prevent me from doing, okay, with this question.
I politely answered the question. I told him just that. I just read my own text when I said what I read. But he said, but I don't understand. It was 17. Right, there's four quarters in a football game.
Thank
so
you.
Will Levis, over the course of four football quarters, Will Levis was atrocious in two of them.
See,
so
I was...
You're
nicer than me. I was going to cut right to that answer.
If he hadn't followed up and pushed back, like, how was it 17-0 at the half? It's because the Titans scored 17 points, only two of them on nice drives. One was a one-yard field goal drive. And the Bears didn't score any points. That's how.
I know. Yeah. No, it's just, because you are, I read that question during a break to you, and I was like, this is the dumbest question I've ever read. How are the Titans up 17? Because they only scored 17. Good defenses give up 17 points in a game, and it just so happened they gave them up in the first two quarters, and I'm giving people a peek behind the curtain. You said, you know what, assume positivity, like maybe it's a legitimate question, and I'm like, all right, I'll let you assume positivity. I'll let you do that, and I just like that question wound up actually being a legitimately kind of dumb question.
It could have been fine if you had just left it after my explanation.
Yeah.
It was, no, that is, They only allowed 14 points to the Bears defense only allowed 14 points to the offense.
Yeah.
The 3 points was a kickoff return.
That's
the
on
result
the special
of the kickoff
teams,
return.
Yeah.
Yeah. It was a Titans 1 yard field goal drive.
Defense
after that.
Did their job on that one.
The defense, if you hold an NFL team to 14 points, that's a really, really good performance.
Exactly.
The standard is, the old days it used to be if you could hold them to, like, the defense's job is to hold the offense to 17 points. It's probably upwards, realistically, it should be like 19 or 20 these days. Like, that's a really good performance if you're holding the two touchdowns.
Right. That's a legitimate question if the question is, how did the Titans win by 17? They won the first half.
But the overarching message is, as it relates to what we're talking about, is the Bears are very opportunistic. So if CJ, you know, played the same game that he did last week and had a couple of those dicey throws, there's a chance that the Bears could do more with that than the Colts did. And so that's all that, you know, that CJ, it was a good victory in which you got some good lessons that you can learn from it, because you are facing a team that can capitalize on those errors.
And the game script, we'll call it, for a Bears win has to have turnovers in it, or a block punt, or a short field set up by long returns. Like, if this is a game where it's just the two offenses are going back and forth, with the Texans are going to win this game by at least two touchdowns. The Bears need some mistakes from the Texans, or opportunistic plays by them setting up some short fields in order to hang in this game, especially on the road.
Yeah.
I think to hang in this game.
I think the big test to last week was, as you know, as we've been saying all week, and Bobby Slowick talked about it yesterday, the test for CJ in games like last week was, okay, if the Colts are going to try to take away the deep ball and try to play conservatively, then you just got to hand the ball off. You got to take the easy stuff underneath. And that's frustrating. CJ knows that academically. Mm-hmm. It's just that, man, now they've got this high this high powered potentially offense. And it's kind of like, it's kind of like having a muscle car that you got to drive the speed limit all day long.
Yeah.
That this is like, hey, you are going through. You know what you're doing, CJ, against the Bears defense?
School zone.
You're driving through a school zone. Yeah. And you just got to like, nope, you're going 25. You're going 25. You're going 25. We'll blast it as soon as we get out of here. And I know the cops are back there, but just you got to bide your time.
Interesting question on TV right now that they're talking about. They're doing a what if segment. What if Caleb Williams plays poorly in a loss to the Texans? And I'm going, okay, they're going to bench. And Bart Scott saying he'll still be the starter, but if it looks bad, Matt Eberflus better watch his back.
Oh, this, my biggest fear about this game is that Bobby Slowick gets distracted by a job offer from the Bears at the half. that all of a sudden, like, one of them is like, hey, Bobby, we'll talk about this later, but listen, man. There's a seat in the coach's office waiting for you next January if you want it.
We need someone to keep eyes on Bobby on the field. Like, see, because we're not, you and I are going to be doing the pregame show. So if any of you are going to be in the stadium early, you know, like an hour early, where all the coaches are just out there mingling and stuff, keep an eye on Slowick and make sure he's. If he's talking to anybody from Chicago, let us know.
Anybody from the McCaskey family?
Right.
I think the managing owner, the controlling owner, doesn't have the last name McCaskey, but it's in that same lineage.
It's all family.
Yeah, watch out for the owners of the Bears trying to sidle up to Bobby Slowick.
Good call, Seth. Here's Bobby Slowick talking about Joe Mixon's workload in week one. Obviously, he's not going to carry the ball 30 times a game for 17 games. Is this type of workload sustainable?
Physically, I'd say he's probably one of the few guys remaining in the NFL that could handle that. I mean, there's not many offenses you're going to run the ball to the same guy 30 times over and over and over and over again every week. But I'm not really worried about his workload in that regard. Like, he's just built and has in his past done that before and is built to do that. But it really is more of, we'll give Joe the ball as many times as necessary, you know, and we'll give Nico the ball as many times as necessary, and we'll give Steph the ball as many times as necessary in Tank, and like really all the way across the board. And every game's going to wind up playing out different. So, you know, in that game, it was a 30-carry game for Joe, and when you have 30 carries and you're averaging over four, in his case, five a carry, that's a heck of a day.
This is it's a rich folks problem, I think, but when you do have a running back, because we've seen this with Arian Foster in the past, as a fan base, you start to get a little bit nervous when your running back is getting heavy usage early in the season, because we know what happens with running backs, not just these days, but especially these days, but throughout time, if they get 400-plus touches in a season or whatever the magic number is, it gets dicey for those guys, both down the stretch and on into the, you know, for their career. Derrick Henry, I think, is one of those guys who's an exception and can handle heavy, heavy usage and still stay strong. Joe Mixon perhaps might be that same guy, but he still is relative. He hasn't gotten to that point where he's doing it at the age of 30 or 31 yet. No. We're right in that moment where we don't know exactly, okay, is this a guy who is 100% like that and can handle the heavy usage? I would prefer that two things happen. One is that, especially going against the Bears, they're going to play a lot of zone, that they find their groove and they can carve up the zone a little bit and use the passing game. But also that, yeah, maybe Damian Pierce really 100% proves me wrong this week. And, you know, comes in and looks way more like 2022 Damian Pierce when he gets his touches. It looked good last week, but we just, you know, we need to keep building on that.
Yep, that would be good. That would be good. Let's talk about Stephon Diggs as we dig into the Bears and the Texans matchup here on Sunday Night Football. Here's Bobby Slowick on Stephon Diggs. Short pass game was the name of the game on Sunday against the Colts. How does Diggs help in that short pass game?
Yeah, I mean, he's tough. He has phenomenal hands. He's competitive, and all of that equals, you know, ball control. But he's also explosive, and that for us will enable us as the season goes to stretch the field. His ops in the last game really, you know, again, it was a lot of shell. So when his ops were called, it just didn't happen to be the right play. And a lot of times when we had to get the ball down underneath, he was the guy that was under there. But it I think it really helps just reinforce to the quarterback that we can be willing to get the ball just for a completion when we don't get what we want, and we can trust the guys underneath to go move the chains, you know. And I'd like an example is one of the first third downs of the game, we throw it short of the sticks to Steph, and Steph's like kicking himself that he didn't get the first down, you know, because he takes a lot of pride in that. And that kind of mindset, that mentality, yeah, you can get him the ball anywhere.
That was the play that afterwards on the sideline, Stephon Diggs was pointing at himself and saying, it looked like he was saying, that's on me, that's on me. Or no, my bad, my bad. Yeah. Which I figured people in Buffalo probably lip read as, I'm sad, or something like that.
Yeah.
I think the ironic thing about this NFL season might be, if you watched the Bills last night, they were doing a lot of the things that they started trying to do with their new offensive coordinator in the last third of last season. Mm-hmm. And for Stephon Diggs, there just wasn't enough talent on the field for the Bills last year, or Josh Allen wasn't on the same page with enough guys for it to really work out the right way. That game on Sunday, the Texans used Stephon Diggs in much the same way that the Bills had been using Stephon Diggs. The difference is that Stephon Diggs had two touchdowns.
Yeah.
You know, he wasn't going to rack up deep shots or anything like that necessarily because of the coverage that the Colts were playing, but Stephon Diggs had room to run. You know, he's open on a slant in the red zone. This stuff that doesn't necessarily happen. I mean, we saw it with Tank Dell on his one reception to the, that short reception to the right, where he had room to run afterwards because he was wide open, because teams are going to have to account for all these guys. That's where I think that first game couldn't have gone better in terms of, okay, this is what it might look like for Stephon Diggs, and it's not bad.
No.
You know, he doesn't need to get more targets than everybody else or anything like that. He had two touchdown receptions on a day where otherwise it wasn't like he was overly active.
Right. He seems happy. He does not seem sad. How do you game plan for getting all these guys the ball, Bobby Slowick?
Truthfully, it's not a large part of the thought process. You know, I feel like I'm not, this isn't completely unusual. Like in San Fran, there was Debo, there was Ayuk, there was Kittle, there was Christian. Like there were a lot of guys you wanted to touch the ball there. So I feel like that's just how I'm used to approaching every game. You know, you make sure you have ammo for everybody. And through the course of the game, you know, as soon as you try to force it to somebody, a lot of times what happens is you call a lot of bad plays. And we kind of get into a rhythm of guys understanding the intent of what we're trying to get done. So they know when their shot is called or when their time is called. And if the defense gives it to us, let's go. And if they don't, then we got to be okay with just giving what they or taking what they give us and just staying on track, pressing forward so that we can stay on the field as long as we can.
Yeah, I think that's probably a good metaphor for life in a lot of ways. When you start trying too hard to force something, at various times with the Rockets, I could say, all right, well, like there's times where you should be taking a lot of threes back in the Daryl Moore. You should be taking a lot of threes because the threes are there and they're good shots. It was the games when they just started feeling like, no, we have to have 33 point attempts,
yeah,
no matter what, and
right.
They're gunning it up. That's when you're letting the metrics rule the day or whatever. So when you try to force it and say like, okay, we got to get this guy this. You start managing it like a little league football team where you're like, all right, so you got somebody on the sideline keeping track of targets and
yeah.
Plays and everything. It's like the guy that always has to ask a question at a work meeting. You're like, dude, if you're the guy that always has, if it's your personal policy to always ask a question at any work meeting,
yeah.
Just know this, you are hated and despised
yes.
by your coworkers,
yes.
Okay? If you got a good question, you got to relevant. Be the guy that's always like, oh, yeah, you know what? When he asks a question, it's a really good question.
Yeah.
Don't be the guy that when you're in a 45-minute meeting and it's gone 55 minutes and the boss says, anybody else? You say, yes, have you noticed we've been having issues with the Gmail? Like, don't be that guy. Don't be that guy. I've got three issues I'd like to address with the Gmail.
Yeah. We've got one of those with our it's not 610, but with the company we've got one.
We do?
Yeah, we've got one. Yeah.
Oh, we'll talk about it afterwards.
Yeah. We've got one. Yeah,
thinking that you have to love all your children equally. That same thing. Yeah, like, no, play favorites. Play favorites.
It's easy for you to say. You got one kid.
I know.
I love how you tell all these multi-kid parents to power rank their kids.
I'm the parent who's the equivalent of, like, the person who has no children giving you parenting advice.
Yeah.
I'm the guy with one kid who will give you advice on how to handle your children.
Make it a meritocracy.
Not
on how to handle them, on how to rank them.
Yes.
Seth hates power rankings, except when it's one of his coworkers
I'm
being
not,
forced to rank their kids.
I'm not telling you how to power rank them, Sean. I'm just saying you should.
Should power rank them. That's true.
Yes,
yeah. Fair. Fair.
Disown one of them if you need to. it only serves to send a warning to the other several.
The other two. That's a good call. The Texans were kind of aggressive on fourth down in this game on Sunday. It'll be interesting to see if they choose to go that route again if they get to some fourth down situations. Bobby Slowick asked yesterday, what goes into the decision-making there?
Truthfully, it's pretty easy for me because I don't have the extra step of having to make the decision. So for me, it's like once third down ends, I'm like, all right, fourth down call, let's roll. And then he tells me I get to do it or I don't, you know. And I mean, it's kind of as easy as that, you know. Like, we got to the 2-yard line there at the end of the game, and I know he was thinking about what he wanted to do, and then he ultimately decided, hey, let's go score. Got to play for that. Let's go, you know. So I'm not gonna say they always work, but it's easy for me. It's just once you're used to that, you prepare as though you're going to do that every time.
You know, I enjoy putting myself in Bobby Slowick's situation there, where you're thinking like, oh, okay, no matter what, you're not even thinking about whether you're going to go for it or not. You're just, okay, what are we going to do? Now, it is important. There are those situations where you want to know that you're going to go for it for sure on fourth down, because it affects your play calling.
Yeah.
You know, if it's third down and you know you're going to go for it on fourth down, then you're much more likely to call a run. But that's still out of his hands somewhat. I was a little disappointed that nobody asked him about the end of the first half last week, based off of that. The sideline.
You mean the approach or the...
No, just the whole scenario of CJ not having enough time to get the play call off and the refs and all of that. Because I think that something the Texans have been really good at is the sideline administration type of stuff in those situations. There haven't been many glitches at all. And it almost feels like one of those things where they've definitely got a good process for it. Right. I don't think Slowick doesn't have to go up to D'Amico and say, hey, coach, I think I've got a really good plan if you want to go for it on fourth down. Mm-hmm. D'Amico trusts that Slowick will have a good call and he's just going to make the decision. I almost feel like they've probably got a really good process in place for all of those in-game decisions. And when an official with communication issues just botches everything all to hell, it's like a fine-tuned watch. It throws it that far askew.
Yeah.
Because that was... I know the official told CJ that the clock was going to be running, but that official had already established that he did not doesn't speak proper English at times. he's not a good communicator. So CJ operating like he didn't know the clock was running, it makes me question whether he was actually told or how he was told it.
Yeah, we'll hear from Matt Burke a little later on in the show on the defensive side of the ball. But this is a good question. I thought the person starts it off with talking point. Thank you, texter. Talking point. Desmond Ridder, Bryce Young, and Zach Wilson, all terrible quarterbacks, had career games against the Texans last year. What's stopping Caleb Williams from doing the same?
Yeah, I think big thing with the Texans. It's a really good question. That was one of the more annoying things about the Texans defense last year. I think that so much of what was wrong with them last year was just from the neck up. The errors that they made and some of the sloppiness and the big plays they allowed. I think that, and D'Amico alluded to this yesterday, or Matt Burke alluded to this, you know, some of those big plays against the Colts, they were 50-50 balls, and you'd be tempted to maybe say, like, well, sometimes the other teams just, you know, they make the physical play, but defensive backs could have been in better position to contest those 50-50 balls. If Jimmy Ward, you know, had handled it differently, mm-hmm. he could have been up and getting a hand on those balls. I think against bad quarterbacks at times last year, I think they were hyper aggressive versus the run. They almost maybe read the scouting report a little too well, and those linebackers especially and the safeties were hyper aggressive to the run, against the run, and they got skewered by play action. So you got to play clean football. It just comes down to play your reads, play the scheme, don't be going out of your way and trying to be superhuman about stuff. And they showed some of that weakness again last week. They've got to play cleaner football.
Yep.
And I think that when you're playing sloppy football against a guy that maybe you don't respect as much as you should, that's where guys like Zach Wilson were able to have career days.
Yeah, Zach Wilson and Desmond Ridder did. Bryce Young didn't have a career day. I mean, Bryce Young was they lost 15-13 or something like that in that game.
Yeah, I think in the case of at least definitely the Jets and the Panthers, the Texans' offense versus good defenses last year was disappointing in general.
Yes.
That was where they really, as good as they were, you know, when it came to being a genuinely good offense, they were bad in the red zone, and versus good defenses that could just play their scheme, the Texans couldn't take advantage of it. So, you know, when they played a defense where those teams were worried about CJ and they could take away the deep ball and just let their front seven handle it up front, that's where the Texans really started to struggle. And that's where, you know, like, the Bears will be a good test. I think the Bears are genuinely probably going to be a really good defense this year. At the very least, they're going to be opportunistic like they were last year. That's a good test for this offense. Like, Ravens, how do you do against the better defenses?
Yeah, the Ravens twice. first game of the year and the last game of the year. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Payne and Pendergast with you on a football Friday. All right, let's do the giveaway here, Ben. Let's give away these tickets to the Cougs and the Rice Owls. Last chance to get to go to the Bayou Bucket game this weekend. 7 p.m. TDECU Stadium. 713-572-4610 is the number to call. Giveaway is right now. Caller number 5 is going to win a 4-pack of tickets to this Saturday night's game between the Cougs and the Rice Owls. Bayou Bucket on the line, your last chance to win tickets all week long. So call now, 713-572-4610. It's Houston Sports Leader, Sports Radio 610, giving you those Coug tickets for this weekend. All right, up next, the latest on the Deshaun Watson situation, and a former Deshaun Watson teammate went after him on social media yesterday.
Ooh.
In the wake of a quote that Deshaun had about his own leadership style.
Whoa.
Yeah,
this
what?
Be good.
What? Yeah, we'll get to that coming up next. Stay there.
It's a Football Friday on Sports Radio 610. Live from the Twin Peaks Studios, here's Payne and Pendergast.
All right, latest on the Deshaun Watson situation. Of course, he is being sued once again by a woman that back in October of 2020 he had a date with. He's being accused of some pretty disturbing things, some of it very similar to what he was accused of by over 24 massage therapists a few years ago. Tony Busby is representing the plaintiff. She's going under a Jane Doe pseudonym right now. Reportedly, Rusty Harden is trying to get her the same way he did with the victims of the first slew of lawsuits, trying to get her to have to disclose her actual government name. Tony Busby said in an email to ESPN yesterday that two things. One, they are trying to schedule a meeting for Jane Doe to meet with the NFL. The NFL is underway in conducting yet another Deshaun Watson investigation, and they're trying to make this happen within the next couple weeks. The other interesting thing Busby had to say was that he, quote, has a pertinent video. He has pertinent video and two additional witnesses for the NFL to speak with, end quote. So this is this is getting very interesting, Seth, especially if this, unlike the other lawsuits, ends up going to a trial of some sort.
Yeah, I guess. There is at least one lawsuit that's still out there and potentially might go to trial.
From the first round.
There's still stuff looming out there. And I guess one of the biggest questions are, did the Browns know about this particular instance? And did, you know, what does it, I mean, for Browns fans themselves, and whether they're trying to figure out whether they can cheer for Deshaun Watson or not, there is nothing that's making it feel like, okay, we're in this guy's corner. It's a lot like what we went through an off season, really, where the tables turned in so many respects in terms of, all right, how much are people willing to stand behind Deshaun Watson? And that was after he'd come off a very promising year as a quarterback. He's done absolutely nothing for the Browns.
No.
Even in the victories that he had last year, he did very little to impress anybody as a quarterback. It's on almost all fronts right now. So far, it's been an abysmal failure. I would say both football-wise and from a morality standpoint for the Cleveland Browns organization.
Yeah, it's been bad, man. Like, I've been listening in before our show starts to our sister station up there. It sounds so similar to 2021 for us talking about this, you know, where it's just, it weighs them down, and boy, I wish. And with us, when it was all going down, it was during the offseason. Like, it is very different. This part is different. There are a lot of similarities. This part is very different. They're having to process Deshaun Watson lawsuits up there while also getting ready to try to analyze Cleveland versus Jacksonville on Sunday.
Right. Well, I mean, it was a little bit like training camp that year in 2021, yeah. where Deshaun's out there, he's the practicing, he's wearing a penny on scout team defensive yeah. walkthroughs and all that. It was, it's just, it's weird. It's hard to process yeah. because it's so outside the norm of anything that goes on in any given NFL season. And it's and it's been Deshaun Watson at the center of it in all these atypical situations.
All of them, it feels like, yeah. So Deshaun met with the media on Wednesday this week, and he got asked a lot of questions about his situation. He was not very forthcoming. I'm sure he's been advised not to be very forthcoming about the legal part of his situation. He was asked a question. I didn't pull the whole clip because Deshaun took three attempts at trying to understand or figure out how to meander around the answer to this question. It was a question about leadership. And so I didn't get the part where Deshaun asked three different times, "I don't understand your question." He finally, I guess, grasped the question. Here was a reporter asking Deshaun about his leadership and the trust that his teammates have in him, both in on-field stuff and off-field stuff.
How much of your teammates trust in you come from what you do on the field versus off?
I mean, the trust has always been there. You know, so I think the guys, they trust me. If there's anything that's out there, I mean, you can go ask any one of those guys and they'll give you an honest answer, you know. So, you know, I can't speak for anybody else, but for what, you know, the guys been showing me and what they tell me and shake my hand and come to my locker and on the field dab me up and say to my face, this, you know, that's what they're saying, that they trust me, so.
Do you have a conversation with them when something pops up?
No, because they know my character. They see me each and every day. They know exactly who I am. And I think that's the difference. When you around me each and every day, you know my aura, you know my energy, you know my character. I think you'll understand who I really am.
My aura.
He's legendary. Have I not told you? Legendary. That's my aura.
You know my aura.
I exude legendariness. That's what people say about my aura.
Have you heard anybody talk about their own aura before? That's just so weird, dude.
Not in a annoying fashion.
Right. Like somebody other than a WWE heel talking about his aura. Yeah.
No, but even if you're talking kind of new agey type stuff or anything, they don't talk about it as a way of something that you're bragging about. You know, like. People can just sense my aura.
Oh, my aura. So I'll tell you, one person who is not vibing Deshaun's aura is former Browns running back Jordan Wilkins, who took that quote yesterday and posted a picture of Deshaun fumbling a football and said, "Yeah, sure, bro. Watch the next slide and y'all tell me this was the final preseason game to make the roster." And the next slide is Jordan Wilkins and Deshaun Watson in a clear miscommunication in the backfield. They're lined up in what looks like it's a formation you'd run an RPO out of, you know, like, yeah. And so Jordan Wilkins is standing next to Deshaun in shotgun. Doesn't look like he's really looking for the handoff at all, or it's a botched handoff. And Wilkins puts the caption, "After this, he went to the sidelines and told the coaches, 'I didn't know the play.' And then it happened again on the next drive." So apparently Jordan Wilkins' trust is not...
Maybe there's something about... the Cleveland itself. Because it feels a whole lot almost like the Johnny Manziel who just wasn't opening his playbook at all. And at 0 hours logged on his iPad, all that kind of stuff. Deshaun just flat out doesn't know what's going on. One of the more alarming stats out of Deshaun since he's been in Cleveland is 6.5 yards per pass attempt. I mean, like, you talk about pushing the ball downfield, everything like that. Like, that's like Zach Mettenberger territory right there. I mean, there's nothing about him that's been one bit impressive, scary, like anything. He's thrown for 2,300 yards in the last three seasons. There's not one bit about him that should be an NFL quarterback right now. It's incredible.
Did you see the I call it the spray chart or the graphic of his throws in the game against the Cowboys in the first half? They showed
just all within the line.
The green dots. Yeah. They may as well have been using green dots to draw the line of scrimmage.
Well, and he's holding on to the ball too long, so he's taking sacks. Like, you could try to blame the offense. offensive line, but it's, this is not holding on to the ball too long because it's play action or holding it by design. You know, CJ Stroud last year held on to the ball relatively long, but it's because they had all these deep play action shots that were very, very successful.
Yes.
And he was averaging like 8 yards per attempt a lot of the times. That is not the experience with Deshaun Watson right now. He is a mess. He's an absolute mess.
He's a mess. Now, here's Colin Cowherd actually had a good Watson Cleveland Browns take yesterday where he was kind of, you know, he was comparing the Browns to other organizations, and it was a really good take. And I thought about recording it and bringing it on here. And then he got to the end of it, and I'm like, okay, now I need to bring this on here because Cowherd is saying silly things here at the end of this cut. So take a listen to this. This is about Deshaun and the Browns and the situation they're in cap-wise and how the NFL does have a way to get out of this. But, man, take a listen to this.
There is a difference between making a mistake, which we all do, and creating a problem. Cleveland's an expert at the latter.
Okay.
So they're trying to get out of that Deshaun Watson deal. And now it's not like they get completely out of it, but I looked at the numbers this morning and they cut it in about half. And as we know, if you draft a quarterback and you hit on him in the first or second round, he's kind of a freebie for 4 years. So that's one of the things about the NFL. And Cleveland's about, they're in as dire a place as you could be salary cap wise. But you know, Denver was a mess. They got Bo Nix. I don't know. I think it's going to work.
Denver, he loves Sean Payton so
Denver
much.
Is a mess. And they got Bo Nix.
Bo Nix. It's a path to glory from here on out.
He's played one game.
You got Bo Nix.
One game and he stunk.
Yeah. Didn't even have to spend a high first round pick on him. Look at Denver making moves. Yeah.
It is. It's crazy. Like, it was like a 3-minute video. I'm like, man, Coward's making some really good points. Like, the analogies aren't really bothering me too much. I'm cool with this. And then he just drops in Bo Nix at the end like he's Tom Brady or something.
Okay, so when Deshaun Watson was here, and including in the 2020 season, when he was playing pretty well in some respects, they weren't scoring enough touchdowns, but he was passing, he was moving the ball around well. I had told you, Sean, that I said it on air a lot. It always annoyed me how sloppy he was in the backfield with his fakes and play action, all those, the finer aspects of the game, they were just super, super sloppy. Like, I would watch games and put myself in a defensive end's shoes, and I'm like, okay, I know exactly when this is a boot. I know exactly when it's actually a run or a fake. It's not actually an RPO, all that stuff. It was very, very obvious because Deshaun was so sloppy in it. In one of the gushing articles that The Athletic wrote about Deshaun Watson being acquired from by the Browns at the time, they went behind the scenes and talked about the meeting that Kevin Stefanski had with Deshaun Watson while he was still a free agent. And Stefanski saying to Deshaun, Deshaun asked, you know, they were saying this is positive. Deshaun asked Stefanski if he had any notes about things he could work on. And Stefanski said, I think you could really do a better job with your fakes and some of your mechanics on your handoffs and everything. And Deshaun said, huh, you sound like my high school coach. He always used to harp on that. And I'm like, yeah, it's kind of a big deal in the NFL.
Yes.
I don't think this is one of those things. It's kind of like talking about pass protection with running backs. Like, people just never genuinely want to acknowledge what a big deal it is because it's harder to measure and everything. But it's a big, big deal.
Sure.
I will tell you, as a defensive lineman or a linebacker or a safety watching quarterbacks, it is a huge deal.
Yep.
Some quarterbacks are brilliant. Pat Mahomes is awesome at it, and it screws up your whole day. And Deshaun was continually sloppy with it.
Yep.
Like, it was still right there. This is a guy you're going to give $230 million to? Like, a guy who conducts his personal life like he has? I don't care. Guilty, innocent, whatever. That dude was sloppy as all get out.
Yep.
At the very minimal least. And he can't even be bothered to execute his fakes properly. Stuff that you're coaching up high school kids. It was right there for them to see.
Yep.
And they gave him a $230 million guarantee, and they deserve everything that comes from it.
Absolutely.
Yeah, the owner up there sitting about talking about, like, I talked to women about this, and they're totally cool.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, the women depend on you financially? Sure. Yeah,
right.
Sure.
Right.
Yeah.
All right, into the 8 o'clock hour we go. That was good, Seth. Into the 8 o'clock hour we go. There are 16 0-1 teams right now. Which ones are we most rooting for to go 0-2? I've taken all these 0-1 teams and put them in three different buckets. Which ones are we praying go 0-2 after this weekend? That is next.